What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're broadcasting live at the Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. We're trying to do more this year, so there's some technical issues as some of the recordings weren't going exactly as planned. Just didn't click the right button, but that happens when you're trying to be in two places at one time. But there's lots of great content, possibly a better way to view all these, to get all this is to view the YouTube on the sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. It has the links to the YouTube pages. So that's a better way to check that out because the audio is pretty consistent throughout that. And then also you can see the video there. But definitely check those out. The information about the show notes, the slide notes, presentation notes, those are in there as well on the podcast information. So hopefully you get to learn a little bit. You get to learn a little bit from all this. If you know Bob Marley, thank him. If you don't, I can tell you how to get to know him. Great guy. He's the one that allows us to do all this. So I'm going to continue to thank Bob Marley. And also our promo code for starting in August, we're going to start releasing the promo code or the sweepstakes entry code for school health, for our partnership with school health. We're releasing that here in just a minute, so we'll be ready to write that down. That way you have that. All right, so like I said, I'm going to have that promo code here. You guys ready? Since it is July right now when I'm recording these, and we just celebrated my son's birthday, the promo code for the first set of sweepstakes will be Samuel. So that's his name. That's going to be the promo code. The promo code for the second month, which will be September. So August will be Samuel. September will be Jonah, J-O-N-A-H. And that's the name of my firstborn son, and his birthday is also in July. So since I'm recording these, I'm going to go ahead and use their names as the promo code. So Samuel is the one for August, and then for September, we're going to use Jonah. So when you fill out those forms on school health for the sports medicine broadcast, then you'll want to use those codes.
So we are back again. And if you've been watching live, and it's the sports medicine update for Memorial Hermann. What number is this? 14. 14. 14th medicine update. Second year here at Second Baptist Woodway. And it's a great location for us to do the interview. I want to thank Bob Marley for letting us come out here and do this. And then, of course, Memorial Hermann for putting this on. We have with us Nicole Kasha, who's been on the podcast, or the broadcast several different times. Matt Barnes, who's been on the broadcast several different times. We're going to be talking to Rashad Ford, who's recently on
something that we do, especially
asked him about. We were talking about stretch yourself, so ways to stretch and prevent injuries. He's talking about Olympic lifts and news and don't for that. Some of the cultural move towards Olympic weights. Those people were named anonymous or something like that, what he said. So but they're going to kind of lead the conversation there. Nicole and Matt are students at the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training Program. They're in their second year. And go ahead and let you guys take a look. What questions you got for Rashad? Here's a good one. Rashad, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay.
All right. So, strength conditioning specialist with Memorial Hermann. Been there for a little bit over 2 years now. Actually, at two different locations. So, the medical center, and then also Shepherd Square, which is off of 59 and Shepherd and Westheimer. But former athlete, played collegiate baseball and a little bit of a semi-professional baseball. But definitely have a huge passion for exercise, fitness, weightlifting, just getting people better as far as maybe getting them towards their goals or getting them healthier. But thank you guys for having me.
All right, sounds good. All right, so give us a brief summary of what you talked about in there, and then we'll go with that.
All right, so topic was alternative tools for Olympic weightlifting. Olympic weightlifting, definitely very popular today's in different many avenues, of course, which we know, whether it be high school, whether it be gym settings, but definitely Olympic weightlifting has taken off. But just giving more information as far as maybe some alternative tools that you can use. So I touched on using possibly dumbbells, kettlebells, medicine balls, opposed to just using your barbell. Definitely if you're working with a younger population, I mean, I see that they can benefit for possibly using those tools if they're not ready to use a barbell, maybe, you know, at that point in which you're not coachable. I mean, every kid grows up, just about every kid, I should say, grows up with some form of ball in their hand. Typically, if you watch a baby, possibly when they begin walking, you put a ball in their hand, you watch them throw. If you watch them, they'll squat majority of the time before they throw that ball. So it's kind of funny because we actually have those skills already in us.
Yeah, they're innate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At a very young age, without any type of education and coaching. But yet, as we go on, we kind of tend to lose them. But yeah.
Okay, so you talked about technique and how important it is. How much time do you feel is important to spend with the athlete to coach them just solely on the technique and the form before you actually put weight on them or you actually start with heavy lifting?
Oh, good question. If they're getting the technique right away, now I'm not saying rush to put weight on it. In most cases, for most athletes, definitely if they have some form of resistance training, the bar will not be enough in some sense because they're not going to actually get the true feel of the movement because the bar's just too light. Mm-hmm. So typically what I would do is just give them possibly like some training plates, whether it be maybe 2.5s, 5s, or 10s, just depending on the strength level of the athlete. That way they can actually feel like what some weight actually feels like in their hand if they have a good foundation of movement. But with Olympic lifting, I wouldn't say it's more of a rush to actually load them up as far as weight. It would be more of, okay, let's get down the technique because this one Olympic style of exercise is going to translate to another one that we're going to build upon.
So it's like a progression.
Exactly.
So how comfortable do you like your athletes to be, like, say, like the foundational movement of a regular squat or a front squat, because those are the main – that's the power lift behind the actual Olympic lift that lets you get up off the bottom at, say, the bottom of a clean. Like, how comfortable do you want them to be with that before you say, hey, let's start really loading up on these cleans or snatches, whatever they may be?
Oh, definitely 100% comfortable with them. I feel like if they don't have a good foundation of that, if they're not able to actually move through those exercises comfortably, then giving them some form of Olympic weightlifting, especially with the barbell, they're not going to feel comfortable with it because there is some form of a squat in it. You may not be going as deep, but yet you're still squatting. So if you're not comfortable even getting, you know, possibly down to maybe 70 to 80 degrees as far as knee flexion, then when we try to go over to Olympic weightlifting, I just don't see it really happening for the athlete.
As far as, like, you touched on in there, like, the wrist with your tennis player you're talking about, getting the elbows up, especially, like, getting that front rack position, that's really hard for a lot of people. Do you have any other drills that you do to get that flexibility in there? Because that seems to be a tougher one for people to get. Eventually, they'll get the squat because gravity is helpful. Mm-hmm. But getting that front rack position and not putting that strain just on the wrist, but rather up on the shoulders and the actual skeleton, what drills do you do for that?
Typically, I mean, it's just more of repetitive movement. So what I mean by that is putting them actually in that position, having them create that front rack, whether it be with a barbell or maybe we get up against the wall and have them actually stretch out a little bit. It could be possibly just not having enough extension in the wrist. In most cases, which it is, in which you're not able to actually get up to that point. Yeah, exactly. So, and then also it could just be maybe tightness through the shoulders also. And for some guys, especially like your football players, some of them are just very big throughout the chest, in which that's going to be a limiting factor also.
Yeah. I understand.
Okay, so when you're going through their technique with squatting and you're observing their form and the flat back, I've heard, is just very important. Mm. If you ever see that arch, are you immediately on them? Like, I need to make sure that they have that straight back. Or is a slight arch to the lumbar back kind of okay?
For some, I will, of course, like for it to be straight all the time. For some, I believe once they get to a certain point, I mean, you're not going to be able to hold it. In some cases, it could just be possibly they're not strong enough as far as core strength, which is very important, of course, in anything we talk about, whether it be lifting, whether it be on the field. Of course, the stronger you're on the core, the greater chance for you to get stronger overall. But definitely I would like for the back to be as straight as possible. Now, I'm not talking about as far as like straight up and down. I mean, you're going to draw an angle from the ear down to the hip down, of course. Okay. Yeah. So when we think about straight, I mean, they're not sitting up straight as far as like that would be in a chair, but if they're squatting, their hips are back and you're drawing a line from ear in which their hips are back at that angle.
So those are two landmarks you can kind of look at, the ear versus the hip.
Yeah, well, kind of drawing a line from the ear to the hip. So, and also through the back, of course, if the back's in line with that. Okay. Now, in most cases, like you said, if they have that arch in their back, typically, I mean, if it's very excessive, definitely want to stop. And of course, if they're rounding forward, definitely stop them also.
Okay. So you talk about that line from the ear to the hip. Something I was shown a long time ago was, it's an app called the Coach's Eye.
Yeah, great app.
I've used that. Just talks about, like, you can, like, there's the free version of that, mm-hmm. and you can draw that. I've seen that used a lot to really see, like, because especially, like, for, I feel like athletes as well, they see the video feedback, and they seem to learn a lot from that, especially with the Olympic lift. There's so many movements.
Definitely.
I guess, how often have you used that before, just to maybe better explain it to an athlete?
Quite a bit. Not only that one, then also I believe another app is called UberSense.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that one.
Yeah, in which you also, very similar to Coach's Eye, mm-hmm. but like you said, definitely beneficial for the athlete, because you can sit there and explain, mm-hmm. and you can perform it yourself, be like, hey, this is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But of course, until they actually see it, just like as we were coming up, you know, coaches explain, hey, you're doing this during the game, but when you guys go back and watch video, you'll be like, oh, okay, that's what you were talking about.
A little stubborn.
Yeah, exactly. Most of us are. But, yeah, definitely very beneficial. I would say for any coach, it is a very vital tool to have. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very accessible. Like I said, it's free. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can download it on any smartphone.
Yep.
I would say 98% of the U.S. has a smartphone, or 98% of the world.
Getting close.
Yeah, we're getting close. Some of us still have the old flip phones, but it's all good. But, yeah, very good app to use.
I just came in. I don't have any idea what you guys have been talking about, but the previous interview was about meniscus treatment and rehab and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So Robbie was saying the biggest takeaway he got was that rehab and biomechanical deficits can, can help prevent meniscus injuries. So talking about some of the rehab for, I know you're not a physical therapist, but some of the rehab, some of the good stuff to do for meniscus injuries, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, typically, I know for me, I'm very blessed to be where I am as far as in a physical therapy clinic. So what I do typically is go off of what they've been building on. In most cases, I mean, they've gotten them to a point where they're able to do more functional things. So for me, it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it, I should say. But as far as that, definitely strengthening of the quad and the hamstring, and then also listening to the athlete. For some of them, I mean, it's definitely going to be very irritating to them, depending on, you know, how far out they are, and then also their strength level. And most of them is just building that confidence back in using that limb, in which I've encountered. So for most, of course, when we start running, jumping, things of that sort, they tend to favor the non-injured limb, which what most of us would do, and that's just being cautious and protective of that limb. But as far as like going into like the actual exercises, definitely some variation of a squat, definitely hamstring strengthening, definitely a lot of glute work and a lot of core work.
All right, so we were talking in the last few years, it's kind of gone away from open chain mm-hmm. knee exercises, so that's the quad extension or the hamstring curl
yeah.
where your foot is not planted on the ground. Is it still currently, because Robbie was actually talking about they just bought several of those for his school at Klein. But from what I've been hearing, we'd rather do squats or something where your foot is planted mm-hmm. or like a leg press. What are your thoughts there?
I think both have their place. I would say closed chain from research has shown to be a little bit more superior as far as open chain. And then also with the leg extension, depending on the degree of flexion that you start them off at, it can be beneficial, but yet it could also be somewhat in a negative aspect, in which you could be setting them back or setting them up for injury or possibly re-injuring the knee if the flexion is too much as far as a starting position. Typically, I mean, it's going to go back and forth as far as where to start them off at. And I mean, for most, I mean, you at least want them, if I'm not mistaken, possibly a 70 to 60 degree band as far as possibly starting them off, opposed to starting them off at that 90 degree.
So an open chain does have a place.
Yeah.
But you just have to use precaution.
Use precaution.
Because, right. I mean, you know, obviously you see, like, my soccer players in there, and there's not a whole lot of supervision. They just kind of go in there and do their own thing. Mm-hmm. So they'll get on that machine, and then obviously they do abs because they want to try and look good. But they I was just wondering if I need to keep them away from those, or, I mean, obviously they need more supervision.
Mm-hmm.
Direct supervision and direct, like a program, rather than just go in the weight room and do your own thing.
Yeah, definitely. I would say, honestly, for that population, which is pretty high in ACL injuries, female soccer, female sports in some ways, general, whether it be volleyball, things of that sort. And that's because majority are quad dominant. So actually strengthening the posterior chain, so hamstrings and glutes, so more possibly Romanian deadlifts or exercises like that that are going to strengthen the hamstrings, opposed to just focusing more quad dominant, like you said, or quad exercise, I should say. Like you said, they go in there, they do leg extensions in the ass because they want to look good, which is all the muscles that we can see in front, but yet neglecting the backside, in which they get a lot of their power from. And of course, I mean, soccer is a very, in some ways, quad dominant sport, because if you think about it, you're constantly kicking, kicking, kicking. So in some ways, they are performing a lot of leg extensions.
Yeah. But they also have to run, which is a lot of
hamstring, exactly.
Cutting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I think I discussed this whenever you came. You know, I would love to be more trained, like, and be able to instruct the students and the coaches on how to lift correctly to, you know, for their sport.
Mm-hmm.
But just also at the same time, I don't want to live in the weight room. I just don't have time for that.
I hear you.
Got to figure out the best way for me to include small tips to small changes instead of just taking it.
Yeah, that's what it's all about anyway. Just making small little changes here and there, and eventually, I mean, it'll turn to something big.
Do you ever just focus on the hamstring for the posterior chain and kind of not neglect glutes, but not really concentrate on the glutes? Are you more focused, or is it more like in general, like we're going to work on the posterior chain?
I like to go more general, to be honest with you.
Okay,
so, yeah. Typically, majority of the exercises, whether it be a Romanian deadlift or a good morning, which is, some will say primarily glute or posterior chain, but yet your glutes are still involved with it. So I like to attack it as a whole, opposed to just doing like maybe a standing leg curl or seated leg curl, which is going to be primarily your hamstrings.
To me, sometimes whenever I see athletes doing a deadlift or whatnot or a squat, they're like saying they're working their hamstrings and they completely forget about the glutes.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of just focus on the hamstrings, but you also don't want to become hamstring dominant and kind of rule out the glutes or just neglect the glutes. Like, you want to be able to focus on the whole posterior chain. Right?
Definitely. And in some cases where they may feel like, okay, oh gosh, it's just hamstring recruitment. Some cases the glutes may not be active, in which they're able to recruit them to actually perform the lift. So easy way of somewhat, I use as somewhat of a test or assessment, I should say, is glute bridges. Definitely single leg glute bridges, because as you get the athlete to bridge up over and over, or possibly the first few reps, I'll ask them where they feel it, and they'll say, oh, a lot of hamstring, which you may have encountered also.
Yep.
And in some cases, those glutes are just not being recruited.
Firing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're just not firing. So the hamstrings are doing majority of the work, in which the athlete is not going to be able to actually get to their full potential at that time, because they're not able to recruit those larger muscles that are actually going to produce more of the power that they want.
So to continue an exercise like that, to recruit the glute muscles, you kind of have to re-educate and re-coach their glutes to fire along with the hamstrings, right?
Exactly.
That.
Yep. And that's only because, I mean, in some cases, and in some ways we can't get around it, but for some, it's just somewhat of a sedentary population, a lot of sitting. So if you take your high school, junior high athlete, I mean, they're going from class to class, they're sitting during those classes. So with that, I mean, those muscles are shut off. Like right now, as we're sitting, our glutes are shut off, our abdominals are shut off, unless we're being more conscious as far as like sitting upright and actually contracting them, which none of us are, of course, we're relaxing. But like you said, it's just more of re-education, re-coaching to get those muscles.
I do remember in high school being in class, sitting all day and then going straight to basketball practice and almost feeling like I didn't, I have to work out before I start working out with my coaches because it's just
reactivate everything.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
So going back to like Jeremy's soccer players there. So something that's like, we talked about the triple extension, which I think kind of touches into what we were talking about just a second ago. It's like not just only hamstring isolation, which seems like a lot of athletes are doing, but get the triple extension where I have my hamstrings, my glutes, and then also my lower back firing as well. So what are beginner exercises for guys like Jeremy's athletes who just want to kind of go get the washboard abs? What are the exercises for them to start on, essentially, just to give him a, or give them a better idea?
As far as abdominal training or triple extension?
Triple extension. So more of, I guess, going back to Olympic lifting, so like your med ball cleans, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so like I said, medicine balls are a good way to learn. Let's say if you don't have a med ball, dumbbells are a good way. So instead of a kettlebell, if you don't have a kettlebell also, you can use a dumbbell for a kettlebell swing or a dumbbell swing. You can just, of course, change the name. But that's a good way to recruit the triple extension right there if you guys are familiar with dumbbell swings, which I know y'all are. Also, putting a medicine ball in your hand. I touched on it earlier. Had an athlete, of course, years of experience with resistance training in the NFL. But for some – well, not for some reason, but he was going through rehab, and at that time – he didn't feel comfortable performing a push press so with the barbell. So just gave him a medicine ball, had him go do wall balls, came back the next day, felt comfortable with it because he had performed the exercise before and was able to do it. But yeah, your kettlebell swing, dumbbell swings, things of that sort, or any form of medicine ball work, because in most cases, medicine balls are going to be light. Unless you go out and get maybe like that 20, 30 pound slam ball, which they have out there, which are good to use also. But in most cases, I mean, you're going to start them off light just to teach them the movement.
I do want to touch on the fact, one of the things that you said during your presentation is you want to make sure that when you're teaching and when you're coaching an exercise, you want to make sure that they know how to perform it correctly and you want to know you do it because you're not going to prescribe it to them if it's not something that you know how to do or that you feel comfortable doing. A lot of times we'll explain an athlete like, oh, you can do this kettlebell swing and then they'll go do it, but they don't completely have good balance, so they'll go home and or they'll go to the gym and they'll do whatever exercise you want them to do and they end up hurting themselves. So it's good to know, and I do appreciate that, and I think that's great that you're able to coach them fully and know and feel confident that they know the exercise before you actually go and say anything to them.
Definitely, because like you explained, in most cases they're going to go home and do it anyway. So.
They're going to have their own rendition of it, too.
Yeah, kind of definitely.
Like, being able to demonstrate it, I think, is the big thing, because especially with the younger crowd, it's monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah.
And if you demonstrate it wrong, they're going to go do it wrong, I feel like. So your technique is almost, I mean, it's just as important as what you're telling.
Definitely.
That's the big thing, I think, too, because I see that with the younger guys, I feel like, until they get aged.
Yeah, definitely. That's why it's that's why it's important also that we're also coached by good coaches too, and multiple coaches too. I mean, of course, I mean, it's always good to have one, you know, good coach that you've kind of followed around, but it's also good to get input kind of from different coaches and get different maybe mindsets or different tips from them. So it's always good to collaborate with people.
Definitely taking that home with me. If I can't do it, I'm not going to teach it.
There you go.
If I don't know how to do it, not going to teach it.
Yeah, one of the things is we're talking about that, like the biofeedback and, you know, being coached by good coaches. I think it was last Wednesday I went to the Texas Children's workshop, and they were talking about how using, like, your own sensory feedback is okay, but having somebody physically there with you is the best way to do it, that somebody that knows and they can watch you and give you feedback right away, because then you get your own feedback and somebody else's, because it's, you know, when you get tired, especially, you don't really
know,
you can't, the feedback diminishes. And so, like you're saying, just having somebody to watch, or even recording yourself and watching the back later is good, but the best would be to have someone sitting there watching. So
definitely.
Then again, that goes back to where I don't feel like I'm well-trained enough in each of those motions to give those cues. All right, you need to pull your knees in slightly, you know, mm-hmm. or that kind of thing. So it's one of the things I'm working towards. And hopefully with the functional movement screen, if I can get that done, then I can be better
get
at that.
There you go. It's yeah. good.
And the internet says so many different things.
Yeah.
yeah.
Where's the proper resource? I guess that's another good question. Like, is there any sort of book or that you would recommend website that has good, proper, and actual, like, valid techniques? That
oh, yeah, definitely. Now, if you're looking more research-based as far as, like, biggest bang for your lowest buck, whatever it may be, I like to go to PubMed, and then also Google Scholar is another one. Of course, those
for all
are
the Olympic weight training.
Just research period, but as far as like Olympic weightlifting, I mean, there are so many different textbooks out there. But I would say, as far as good coaches, Tudor Bompa, he's more of like your periodized. I mean, he can touch on Olympic weightlifting, but just about there's a lot of good textbooks. Supple Leopard, which is I can't remember the actual author's name, but he is a PT based, but he's also a big guy in CrossFit. But nonetheless, the book has some very good information as far as like breaking down technique. He shows good technique, also improper technique. So it definitely is a good textbooks to have. I'm trying to think of a few more off the top of my mind, but there's one titled Olympic Weightlifting. And I think that's been remade several times, actually. So I think they may have made more additions to it.
Okay.
Okay.
You guys good?
Yeah.
Tell us if someone wants to get a hold of you.
Oh, well, not on Twitter yet. I'm still working on that. My fault. Still behind. But easy way to get a hold of me, email, which is rashad.ford@memorialherman.com. Oh, .org, I should say. So spelling of first name is R-A-S-H-A-D, period, last name Ford, just like the branding of the vehicle, at Memorial Herman, Herman with two N's, and .org.
All right, very cool. So if you want to get any more information about Olympic weightlifts, set up Rashad Ford, and he can get you some good resources there. So next up, we have Logan Wilson talking about ACL reconstruction, and so we'll be back with that in just a second.
Thanks, guys.
Cool.
Nice. Good questions.
And then hit it up here as well?
No.